Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last weekend, rolling power outages affected hundreds of thousands of people in California as temperatures broke records. It was 98 in Oakland, 101 in San Jose, 105 in Concord and Livermore, and 111 in Sacramento. And it was also 130 in Death Valley, but we are still waiting to make sure that that temperature has been confirmed. California's independent system operator, which manages the state's power grid, enacted rolling blackouts starting on Friday night. It was the first time we've had blackouts since 2001. So what explains these blackouts? Well, the ISO's CEO, Steve Berberich, says abnormally high heat and demand exceeding supply. California Governor Gavin Newsom is demanding an investigation. Today's guest, Loretta Lynch, says the demand was not unusual and the state had plenty of supply under the contracts. So what explains this? Loretta Lynch is former president of the California Public Utilities Commission, a lawyer and a community-based consultant. Hi, Loretta. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Loretta, I'm guessing that a lot of people don't know much about California's independent system operator. Do a lot of people know much about this organization?
No, the independent system operator, called the ISO for short, is a private corporation that California created during energy deregulation 20 years ago to run the electricity grid. So we took the operation of the transmission wires away from the utilities and gave them to the ISO, which was supposed to run the electricity grid more efficiently. The problem is the ISO does not keep the grid running smoothly, and it has never run the grid better than the utilities. And this last weekend, it failed in doing its job one, run the electricity grid to keep the lights on at a reasonable price.
Okay, so let's go over that again. Why was this? You're calling it a private corporation because on their website they call it an organization.
Because they don't want you to know they're not a government agency. They'd like to pretend they're a government agency, except for when you want to get information out of them, and then they have an amazing lack of transparency. Very clearly, it's a private corporation that was created under state law to run the grid. It was also created when California was enamored with electricity trading markets. And so the ISO is enamored with markets, and it creates many market electricity trading schemes. And what happens is, the energy traders come and arbitrage California's economy in those markets, meaning that they play market games that drive up the price of power, or they create artificial shortages in electricity supplies that drives up the price of power. And that's what happened on Friday and Saturday.
Who was behind the decision to create the ISO?
Well, actually, Enron spent millions of dollars in the 90s lobbying the California legislature to create this house of cards. But the sons of Enron, who are now Wall Street banks and hedge funds, are the ones who are the most active and biggest energy traders in California, because they realize they can make money in a market that has many fewer rules than the stock market does.
Can you explain to us how energy trading actually works?
Sure. Well, the ISO is supposed to run electricity trading markets. So what they do is, the day before they need the power, they ask, hey, guys, come and bid power. What has been happening is the ISO has created so many mini markets that the traders can arbitrage between the markets. Essentially, they can withhold their power from the main market until the ISO declares a shortage. And when the ISO declares a shortage, a stage two alert, then the traders get paid more money to offer their power into the market. And that drives the price up. And the ISO got caught short on Friday when it shouldn't have. We had plenty of power that California had already paid for. We contract for reserves just in case we need them on a hot day. The ISO refused to use those reserves and instead blacked out Californians.
Who are these traders?
Well, the traders are J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, a ton of hedge funds, Berkshire Hathaway, Sempra Energy Trading, lots of the same participants that manipulated the California market 20 years ago, but even more of the Wall Streeters have run to California because the ISO's market rules are so lax that they can play games that the ISO doesn't blink an eye at and certainly never tells them to stop.
Why is this legal?
So the ISO, although the board of the ISO Corporation is appointed by the governor of California, that was actually a significant protection that we got passed in during the energy crisis. The governor appoints the board, but the board runs the markets according to the rules of the Trump administration, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And not surprisingly, the Trump administration, FERC, is very, let's just say, market and seller friendly and couldn't care less about California's economy or California consumers. So the ISO runs a lax market where withholding occurs and prices go up unnecessarily, and we pay.
I want to give out the phone number because I don't think we've ever talked about the California ISO on this show. So if you have any questions for Loretta Lynch, she's former president of the California Public Utilities Commission, any questions at all about the California ISO, the independent system operator, which manages the state's power grid, they enacted those rolling blackouts starting on Friday and they ran through the weekend. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet at yourcallradio. So you talked a little bit about the board. Who else makes decisions at the California ISO?
Well, they have hundreds of people on staff who run the markets and who run the grid. But scarily at base, we have allowed a private corporation to run California's electricity system. And that corporation was committed, are committed marketeers because they were created during a time where California was all about markets. And that whole system makes them blind to the failures of the markets that they create. So what they do is they focus on making the market work for the sellers, meaning that it will never work for the consumers. It works for the people who they designed it to work for, which is sellers with market power who can withhold their power until the price rises to the point where they deign to sell it to us at superinflated prices.
Who ran the electricity system before the ISO was formed?
Well, the conglomeration of utilities did. PG&E, Edison, SDG&E, and then the public utilities. Now, I'm no fan of the private utilities, but I will say this. At least they had regulation, and the failure with the utilities happen with the failure of the regulators, where the regulators get co-opted and too cozy with the utilities. But at least there are state laws about providing information and, most importantly, only allowing costs that are just and reasonable. The problem with the ISO is they get to decide what costs are just and reasonable, and they say any costs we happen to incur, we're going to deem just and reasonable. So it's essentially the marketeers monitoring themselves, and that never works. So we need to get back control of our electric grid, just like Los Angeles and Sacramento, Palo Alto, and all the cities that have government-owned electric systems. None of them experienced the blackouts that we experienced because of the ISO's incompetence.
Who in Sacramento is overseeing the ISO?
It's a board of governors of this private corporation that's appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. The problem is, once they're confirmed, they sit there for 4 years. And in my experience, what happens is, once those people are confirmed, they answer to the feds, in this case, the Trump administration, and not so much to California. And we had to push and prod and pull and beg and cajole 20 years ago to get the ISO to stop the manipulation. I finally went to the Bush administration, FERC, and made a deal with them to impose just a few consumer protections. The problem is the Trump administration has now allowed each and every one of those protections to lapse, which means our California electricity market is unprotected, and the Board of Governors of the ISO is not doing anything to fix that.
Loretta, are any politicians in Sacramento watching the ISO closely and holding them accountable?
Well, the governor said he was going to investigate, and the three energy entities, the private corporation, the ISO, the Public Utilities Commission, and the Energy Commission, just sent him a letter yesterday saying, we don't know what happened, we'll get back to you. But it's very clear what happened. California, had already bought 100% of what the forecasted need is. And then, just because the ISO isn't very good, we bought an extra 15% on top of that, just in case the ISO needed some wiggle room. And 15% more than you need is a lot of wiggle room. So the ISO comes out and says, hey, it's hot. Well, this blackout was not caused by high temperatures or fires. Of course, sometimes you need more power when the temperature rises. But overall, the 46,800 megawatts we saw on Friday, and certainly the 45,000 megawatts we saw on Saturday, are well within the range of summer power demands. And they already planned for it. For some reason, the ISO didn't get the sellers that we already bought from, who contracted with us to be ready when we needed it. They didn't ask those sellers to deliver the power. And the big question is, why not? My concern is, I don't know who's doing the investigating here. If the agencies that caused the problem get to investigate the problem, we will never know the root cause of the problem. All we'll see is the blame game.
What can you tell us about Steve Berberich, the CEO and president of the Cal ISO?
Well, as the CEO and president of a private corporation, he makes millions of dollars a year running the grid, and he's retiring soon. What I'm concerned about is he came out and did not accept any responsibility for these blackouts. He said, woo-hoo, climate change, woo-hoo, high temperatures, oh, the PUC's to blame, oh, and renewable power's to blame. The ISO has never liked incorporating renewable power into running the grid because it requires some ability and some expertise. And when you are a clunky, slow, inefficient organization, you're not as nimble as you should be, like all the other grid operators that are government-run that easily incorporate renewable power. So he blamed renewable power because the ISO has always favored gas resources.
I'm reading an article from KCRA, and I'm not sure if a reporter challenged him on this because they're kind of giving you three reasons why the blackouts occurred. Berberich is quoted in this piece as saying, I think a lesson out of this is to better look at how we're backfilling for retiring, particularly thermal units like coal units and gas units for that matter. Let me just say this. Renewables have not caused this issue. This is a resource issue, not a renewable issue.
Right. So Monday he blamed renewables until I'm sure the state of California said, no, 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 you're not doing that. And also President Trump took advantage of that blame game and blamed California for its renewables as well. So then he backtracked. But it is not a resource issue. We already bought 100% of what our forecasted need is. And who did the forecasting? The ISO. And then we bought 15% more in reserve power. So either those reserve units were not available to run, why the ISO has a statutory duty to investigate power outages, or they were not called on, why. It is a huge thing to be blacked out, as we in California know all too well. This one, amazingly, was not the utility's fault. It was the ISO's fault. And the ISO patted itself on the back on Monday, saying that they minimized blackouts on Saturday. They chose to black out people in California on Saturday when we had an 8.9% reserve power margin. So we had 8.9% power in reserve, and they didn't use it. They blacked people out instead, in violation of their own rules that says don't black out people until you dip to 3%. So something's rotten at the ISO, and frankly, an investigation that has them investigating themselves is never going to find it.
So why would they do this?
I think they just messed up. I think they weren't watching all the arbitrage in their market, or alternately, they were. They created a new sub-market called the convergence market, which is really something out of The Big Short in terms of derivatives trading and allowing all sorts of weird trading schemes. Monday morning, without comment, they suspended their convergence market. Why? I think it's because they saw manipulation and they saw these arbitrage opportunities, but they're not going to tell us about that because they're a private corporation and they're not subject fully to the Public Records Act, nor are they subject fully to the Open Meetings Act. And they should be, because while they happen to be a private corporation, they were created by the state of California and we all depend on them to do their job right.
Today we're speaking with Loretta Lynch, former president of the California Public Utilities Commission. Loretta is also a lawyer and a community-based consultant, and we are talking about the rolling blackouts that started in California on Friday night. It was the first time we've had blackouts since 2001. California's ISO, independent system operator, manages the state's power grid and enacted those blackouts. Loretta will be with us for 10 more minutes, so if you have any questions for her, give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. If you or someone you know was affected by these blackouts, it was so incredibly hot. I'm thinking of, you know, elders, people with disabilities, people, and with COVID, a lot of people are staying inside. And so it's just so difficult to deal with no power. We've got a number of emails with the same theme, Loretta, so I'm just going to read a couple of them. Bill says, how could the ISO be reformed or dismantled? Sue writes, this is really alarming. How can we get rid of the ISO, and have there been any efforts to do so this far?
No, there haven't been any efforts to get rid of the ISO, but yes, I think the ISO either needs to be reformed or rejected because it does not serve California or its economy in any way, and the state doesn't have full control over it. And the last thing I want to do today or any day is be even more vulnerable to the Trump administration's whims. So what could we do? One, no public run utility blacked their customers out, and none of them experienced shortages of supply, because even though there were high temperatures, those utilities planned for them, and then they bought the power, as we did too, to provide for them. The other thing that those utilities do is they don't play these market games. They don't run these arbitrage opportunities. They just buy power, they run it, they provide it to their citizens. We need to get back to that model, and we can either do it through a public run grid. The state of California created the ISO through statute. That means they can change it through statute. We could take over as the government the running of this grid and eliminate all these markets arbitrage opportunities and put in real rules that would stop the market manipulation. Or we could just make all the utilities public and either run it on a regional basis or a state basis, as Senator Wiener had proposed for PG&E.
Are the number of public utilities growing?
I think we have 22 or 24 in California, and they handle about 20% of the demand, of the load, overall. There are lots of laws on the federal and state level that make it hard to make new public utilities. But what's really interesting is, on the city level, nationwide, cities are waking up and saying, hey, we could do better. So even the city of Chicago is now negotiating to municipalize, meaning take over their private utility and run it as a city. And over a dozen cities across the country are in the process of doing that or are seriously studying it and negotiating with their utilities, including a really interesting opportunity in the city of San Diego. So that city council has before it this fall whether they're going to renew a contract with SDG&E for decades or whether they're going to take the time to really examine whether or not they should take over that utility and run it themselves. Mm.
Sue also asks, where does Governor Newsom stand on keeping the ISO in place?
I don't know. It is a critical moment for the governor, though. He has to fight the power marketeers. If he doesn't, and he just says, hey, we need to buy more power, buying more power and more power at higher and higher prices will mean sky-high prices for Californians, which is the last thing we need right now, or that our economy needs, given the economic problems COVID has created. So I hope the governor really does get to the bottom of this, but I also hope that he conducts an independent investigation, so where the investigator is independent from any of the energy agencies or entities that are involved here, and that he uses subpoena power, like I did, to subpoena Enron 20 years ago to say, what are you doing in this market? We want to see it under oath. And then I think he should commit to all Californians that he will make public all the information he receives from an independent investigation, because we have a right to know why hundreds of thousands of us were blacked out for no good reason, except for the ISO couldn't do its job.
I'm looking for a few updates, and I found this piece out of CNBC. It says an irate California Governor Gavin Newsom signed an emergency proclamation allowing some energy users and utilities to tap backup energy sources amid a days-long heat wave that prompted rolling blackouts. Newsom acknowledged the state failed to predict and plan for the energy shortages. He said, "I'm not pleased with what's happened. You shouldn't be pleased with the moment that we're in, the state of California."
Well, the problem is that emergency order basically allows the old stinky fossil plants, which are highly restricted in how often they can run because they create a lot of air pollution, to run more. That's the first thing that Gray Davis did, too, 20 years ago when he was confronted with market manipulation and didn't quite believe the extent of the manipulation. He allowed the old stinky fossil plants to run more, causing a whole lot more air pollution in Los Angeles. That's also the last thing California needs, given all the wildfires, is intentionally putting more air pollution into our air from the old stinky power plants. Instead, you need to get tough with the folks who are withholding the power and go into the power plants that say that they're accidentally offline and say, show me what happened here, and get online right now, or we're going to fine you. And for all the companies that are withholding power, you need to say, hey, you provide that power that we already paid for right now, or we're going to bar you from our market when times are good.
We have a caller who couldn't stand the line who says, is Governor Newsom complicit?
I don't think so. I think that he has allowed the private corporation to just run without really understanding. It's a private corporation that doesn't care about California because they might be Californians, but they answer to the Trump FERC. And so it's only in times of crisis that one's character is revealed. And I would hope that he would want to understand the true problem here and not just say, paper it over by buying more, because ultimately what's going to happen is, if our market's being manipulated, and I hope I'm wrong, I hope it's not, but if it is, the manipulators don't stop. They'll wring every penny out of California. So we need to get a handle on this right now before it becomes out of control.
We have a comment from David. California needs to step on the ICO. Rolling blackouts caused by price gouging should be a felony.
Absolutely. I completely agree with David. You just shouldn't mess around with the California economy, and you shouldn't mess around with Californians, especially when we had plenty of power. I'm disturbed because they didn't explain anything. They just blamed. They just said, high temperatures, oh my, climate change, oh my, renewables. And then they walked back the renewables when they got slapped on the hand. But that's not what caused this. We have high temperatures a lot in California, and if they can't handle the grid in August, when we only had, let's just be generous, 47,000 megawatts of need, how are they going to handle the Santa Ana winds and the grids at the end of September when we are up to 49,000? Mm. That's what I'm concerned about.
Well, and quickly, Loretta, can you help us read these numbers? So I'm at the California ISO website. And it says, today's outlook, current demand, 34,000 megawatts, forecasted peak, 46,000.
Huh. This morning they had current demand at 50,000 megawatts, so I don't know why availability. Current demand, 34,000, means it's not gotten very hot yet. 34,000 is really low because, as we know, it's cooler in the Bay Area this morning. Right. 46,000 is really an average summer weekday. The ISO will tell you, well, on average, it's 38,000, so this is higher. But they're averaging in the weekends, too, to bring the number down. So when you look at just a weekday, 46,000, we hit all the time in California. And we've already bought more than enough power to handle the 46 or 47,000 megawatt load.
Final thoughts, Loretta. Given that the California ISO does not get much media attention until these blackouts happened, what can people do to raise their voices on this issue?
Well, I think you should call your legislators and the governor's office and tell them to have an independent investigation of the ISO where they issue subpoenas and they commit to providing the public everything they learn. But there's also another way. The attorney general could also investigate the ISO, because it's a private corporation, and it's a special kind of private corporation called a public benefits corporation. So it was created to serve the public, and that gives the Attorney General enhanced oversight authority. So the Attorney General could go in and get tough with the sellers who are withholding their power, and the Attorney General could go in and start fining them. So both the Attorney General and the governor need to get serious about getting this market in order and under control.
Do you expect that we'll have additional rolling blackouts?
Well, only if the ISO continues its incompetence and continues its focus on serving the marketeers and not Californians. The problem is, I've seen no evidence that that the ISO is interested in protecting Californians. So let's see what they do with these markets. They've already blown off the price caps, and they're buying power at any price offered, which, if they continue to do that, our electric bills are going to skyrocket in just a couple months, right when people are feeling the renewed effects of COVID again.
Wow. Well, thank you for all the information, Loretta. Thanks for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rose, for shining a light on something that most people don't look at, but you know, problems happen in the darkness. So thank you for you.
Thank you. Loretta Lynch is former president of the California Public Utilities Commission, a lawyer and a community-based consultant. And you can find more about the ISO at yourcallradio.org. We will definitely continue to cover this issue. Coming up after a break, we will talk about the wildfires raging across California and other parts of the country. We will talk about what we can do to protect ourselves from wildfire smoke. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss the wildfires raging across California and other parts of the country. CNN reports there were at least 77 large complexes of wildfires burning in 15 states as of Tuesday night, almost a third of them in California. Most of these fires were caused by lightning. 45 million people are now under a heat warning or air pollution advisory. Here is a headline from yesterday's Mercury News. With 367 wildfires raging, CAL FIRE to all residents of California, be ready to go. The Bay Area has the worst air quality in the world. This is according to the San Francisco Chronicle's California Air Quality Tracker. This was as of yesterday. Bay Area residents are still being advised to stay inside if possible with windows and doors closed. Today's guest, Dr. Mary Prunicki, has done extensive research on the health effects of wildfire smoke on our immune systems and overall health. She's also studied the health effects on children. Dr. Mary Prunicki is Director of Air Pollution and Health Research at the Sean Parker Center for Allergy Research at Stanford University. Hi, Dr. Prunicki. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. You know, we've done so many shows about the connections between climate change and fires, and almost all of our guests over the years have said this is our new normal. It's just that it feels like it's so early this year.
That's correct. It certainly has me concerned. You know, when the campfire happened prior, you know, that was late November. But this is, you know, a huge amount of fires with no rain in sight. And, you know, we have a long way to go for wildfire season. So it's certainly a big, big concern with it, especially overlaid on top of the COVID situation.
You know, yesterday, almost everyone I knew in California could smell the fires. A lot of people were evacuated. I've read a lot of the research that you've done. Can you just give us some general information about why wildfire is so toxic? And part of the reason is because of all of the toxic chemicals that are released when the wildfires burn. Can you talk more about that?
Sure. So, you know, in general, wildfire smoke is about 80% particulate matter of 2.5 microns or less. And the reason that that's so significant is particulate matter at that size is small enough. It's about 1/30th the size of human hair. And it's small enough that it can be inhaled and go all the way down into the base of our lungs and then cross over into our bloodstream and then travel throughout the bloodstream wreaking havoc. So the smaller the particle, the more dangerous it is to our health. And, you know, unfortunately, wildfires you know, are you know, of the size that we're able to inhale.
So it is really important, if you can, to stay inside and make sure that your windows and doors are closed.
It's the biggest thing you can do for your health right now is to stay away as much as possible from any exposure to wildfire smoke. And anything that you can put off or avoid, exposure is the best, you know, and even there's no way to fully protect yourself if you, you know, leave the safety of your home and clean air, and assuming you have that, and, you know, go outside.
We've done a lot of shows about air pollution and the effects on health and immune systems. Can you talk about how you go about learning the health effects of wildfire smoke? You've done so much research on this with a lot of participants.
Yes, so we've done some studies, and the first one, we actually looked retrospectively at children in the Fresno area. Fresno is, you know, near Yosemite, and so they always get some wildfire smoke exposure in the fall. And we looked retrospectively at a group of children who had been exposed to a wildfire, you know, 3 months prior versus a prescribed fire, and we had blood samples, and then we do tests on the blood and look for changes. We've also done studies with teenagers exposed in that area, exposed to wildfire smoke, and now we're working with firefighters and trying to look at the long-term both acute and chronic changes in the immune system when you're exposed to wildfire smoke. What we found overall is similar to what we find with our air pollution research in general, which is that exposure to wildfire smoke causes an increase in what we call inflammatory cytokines in the body, and changes in the epigenetics of your DNA, so not mutations of your DNA, but it is the immune genes are up or down regulated depending on the type of immune gene we're talking about. And so basically your immune system does not work as well after exposure to wildfire smoke.
Can you elaborate on that? What sort of changes do people experience?
Well, on a cellular level, we see a downregulation of a particular immune cell that's a good immune cell. It's called the T regulatory cell, and it is kind of like the peacekeeper of the immune system, and kind of keeps everything in check and everything at a with a healthy balance. So we see fewer of those immune cells when you've been exposed to air pollution or wildfire smoke. So that's not a good thing. And we also see increases in markers that are associated with inflammation. And so, you know, when you get an increase in inflammation, depending on, you know, where in your body we're talking about, that's not a good thing, and can, you know, potentially make you more susceptible to things like viruses. Just make your immune system not as optimal as you would like.
What if you already have pre-existing conditions? How does that make it worse?
Well, we know from, it definitely makes it worse. We know from several studies done when they've looked at exposure to a wildfire and then looked at the emergency room visits and hospital admissions, we know that exposure to wildfire smoke increases respiratory type admissions and ER visits for things like asthma exacerbation, COPD exacerbation, acute bronchitis, pneumonia. But we've also found out that wildfire smoke exposure also increases cardiac events, especially those age 65 and older. And so there's increases in ER and hospitalizations for things like heart attacks, strokes, arrhythmias. And recently a paper came out that found that in people age 35 and older, when they're exposed to wildfire smoke, there's an increase in sudden cardiac arrest, which is, when the heart just stops. And typically those people don't even make it to the emergency room. And so previously a lot of studies hadn't considered that population. Other studies have shown that when there is exposure to wildfire smoke, within an hour, ambulances are getting calls for respiratory and cardiac disorders. So we know that it can impact people very quickly.
What about long-term health effects?
That's a good question. And that's an ongoing area of research. And so that's why we're actively looking at the immune systems of retired firefighters who have had, years and years of this wildfire smoke exposure. We don't know long-term how, for example, exposure for us here in the Bay Area to a burst of wildfire smoke is going to impact us years from now. We don't know if going back to a clean air environment over the course of, a period of time, if that will if the body will repair itself and we won't see that immune dysregulation.
Today we are talking about the health effects of wildfire smoke. We'll also talk about what we can do to protect ourselves and needed policy changes. Dr. Mary Prunicki is Director of Air Pollution and Health Research at the Sean Parker Center for Allergy Research at Stanford. If you have any questions for Dr. Prunicki, you can give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Dr. Prunicki, let's talk about some of the most vulnerable populations. Our growing homeless population in California. Yesterday, the smoke in my kitchen, it got worse as the night went on. And I started thinking about all of the people living on the streets who cannot go inside. So they have to breathe this stuff in all day and all night.
Right. The disadvantaged are certainly a vulnerable population when it comes to wildfire smoke, and it's a huge problem. In addition, we know from air pollution research studies and then also wildfire studies that those in general with lower socioeconomic status are at a disadvantage and are more likely to experience both air pollution and wildfire smoke, and they typically don't have the resources to get in to clean air, protect themselves, or leave the area and do things that people with money are able to do. Other vulnerable populations include obviously those with pre-existing conditions, respiratory and cardiac, pregnant women, the very young, and the elderly. And then, outdoor workers, firefighters, farm workers, but certainly the homeless population is a huge concern, and that continual exposure to the wildfire smoke, there's certainly has to be extremely detrimental to their health, unfortunately.
Right. And oh gosh, when you think about COVID, at least before COVID, people could go into libraries, they could go, grab a lunch, maybe go to a community center and get a break from the smoke. Right. But because of COVID, there's nowhere to go.
Right. It's a huge problem. And I know that there's some, cooling centers that are trying to follow the social distancing, but that's limiting how many people can come in there and use that. And the continual days of high heat and elevated AQI, it's a tremendous problem. We know that, for some types of cardiac issues, we see the biggest increase after 2 days of exposure to the wildfire smoke. So, the continual exposure is definitely a problem. And I I wish there were an easy solution. I certainly don't know what it is.
And you also point out that this disproportionately impacts communities of color. African Americans are 75% more likely to live in communities adjacent to sources of pollution. More than 1 million African Americans live within a half a mile of natural gas facilities and face a cancer risk above the EPA's level of concern from toxins emitted by those facilities. Right. So then when you add in wildfire to that mix, then it's
correct.
Really high, right?
That's even worse. And then when you add in, you know, the association with the COVID,
right.
That is just like a triple whammy. You know, we know from studies that in areas of elevated air pollution, there's increased rates of COVID. And that's been shown during this episode with COVID-19. And there were also some studies done back in 2002 with SARS, and there was a paper with the MERS in 2004 showing that, you know, there does seem to be a link with air quality and the rates at which people get viral illnesses. It's also been shown with influenza. And recently there was a paper showing that if a community is exposed to an episode of wildfire smoke, then that flu season is worse for those as a whole for that community. So we know that this wildfire smoke is going to have downstream effects kind of far beyond, I think, what we've ever had to consider before.
Well, if you have any questions about the health effects of wildfire smoke, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Dr. Mary Prunicki is Director of Air Pollution and Health Research at the Sean Parker Center for Allergy Research at Stanford. We have a question from Francis. Can you give us your opinion on the use of home air filters? Are they helpful? If so, is there something specific one should look for?
They can be helpful if, you know, the best situation is you're in a home where you have centralized air and you have a nice new, you know, HEPA filter giving you clean air. If that's not possible, air purifiers are certainly something to consider. As far as what type, you can go to several resources on the internet that will recommend the type of air purifier you should get. CARB, California Air Resources Board, I know, has a section on air purifiers. The EPA website has a section on air purifiers to help you choose. It's based on the square footage that you want to filter. If you know, aren't able or need to purchase something that does a smaller amount of square footage, some people create what's called a clean air room within their home. So you take a room that where you're able to, you know, seal the windows, put the air purifier in it, have a fan preventing kind of backdraft when you open the door, and spend as much time in that room where you've got the, and put your air purifier in there and spend as much time as you can in that room, you know, sleeping or doing whatever. If you look on YouTube, there's some videos on how to create a clean air room. There's also, if you're unable to afford an air purifier, there's some YouTube videos on taking a box fan and kind of creating your own air purifier with furnace and AC filters. So I think those are all worthwhile options to try to help preserve the quality of your health.
And again, the California Air Resources Board, and if you just search filters, you will find the section called California Certified Air Cleaning Devices. Thank you for the email, Fran. We also have another email from Sharon who says, listeners can keep aware and when to shelter on the moment by referring to their smartphone weather report. The UV index tells you particulate pollution. Yesterday was 190 to 200 when the average, which is still poor, is 45 to 60. Sharon says that cities like Lisbon, Portugal is 4 to 10. Wow, that's really incredible. And then there's another resource called Purple Air, which is linked to on our website, yourcallradio.org. It's real-time air quality monitoring. Do you have any other suggestions on this? A lot of people opt in to the emergency alert system, and I already got one this morning saying that air pollution isn't as bad as it was yesterday, but they're still recommending that we stay inside as much as possible.
Correct. I recommend, because it can vary depending on where you're at in the Bay Area, to always check the AQI level before, you know, deciding whether or not you're going to venture outside. There are other apps I'm aware of where you can either track fires or, you know, monitor your air quality for where you're at. And so I know there's more and more options. There's certainly than even from last year's wildfire season, where people can kind of do their own monitoring. And I think it's wise to do that, especially when they're talking about, you know, potential evacuations of more areas.
And Dr. Pernicki, can you give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of how wildfire smoke affects kids? In one of your recent studies, you found that wildfire smoke is worse for kids' health than smoke from controlled burns.
Right. So, I mean, in general, kids, you know, are obviously smaller. They're usually more active when they're outside. Their lungs, you know, are not completely matured for several reasons. Children, especially ages 0 to 4, are more at risk from the smoke. And the paper you're referring to was comparing exposure to wildfire smoke versus a prescribed or controlled burn, which is where they purposely target an area to burn the undergrowth under controlled conditions, and the thought is that it will decrease the size, severity, and occurrence of future wildfires. So it's like a prevention method. And there's concern, you know, from people who live near places where they do prescribed burns, you know, how is that smoke impacting my health, their health? And so that was kind of the rationale for the study. You know, overall, was it better for our health to do these small burns under controlled situations? For example, when it's windy, they don't do them. Or when there's other, you know, conditions that aren't optimal. Or is it, you know, better to just see what happens and, you know, potentially be exposed to these, mega fires?
You know, given that this is our new norm, that's what all of our recent guests have said. And right now, California Fires is trending on Twitter. I mean, the photos are just horrific. People are fleeing. As I said, the Sacramento Bee, or Mercury News, excuse me, had a headline that said, get your bag ready just in case you have to evacuate. What changes would you like to see, especially when it comes to public health?
I don't think that it's appreciated the both acute and long-term damage that exposure to wildfire smoke can have on the population, and especially given that, you know, you can be impacted from smoke that happens hundreds and even thousands of miles away. I think that, you know, it would be very helpful to have some type of tracking system in place for both health impacts from this type of experience, but also something more centralized for people to be able to, you know, have an idea of, you know, are the smoke plumes going to be coming in my area, you know, before it gets there, and a more centralized way of targeting areas that may need to evacuate. I think a tracking system like that is lacking. But ultimately, we want to figure out a way to have fewer wildfires so we're not exposed to this amount of smoke.
Yeah, exactly. I'm watching a video out of Vacaville, and it's just, oh my gosh, it's devastating.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Well, Dr. Prunicki, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Mary Prunicki is Director of Air Pollution and Health Research at the Sean Parker Center for Allergy Research at Stanford University. And you can find more about her work and her extensive research on the health effects of wildfire smoke on our immune systems and overall health at yourcallradio.org. She's also got a study up about how wildfire smoke affects children. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable, and we will continue talking about the wildfires raging across California. So far, they've consumed more than 124,000 acres, destroying more than 100 structures. 25,000 structures are threatened. Thousands of people have fled their homes. And then later in the show, we will discuss this week's Democratic National Convention. And we'll talk about the party's platform. Thanks to Kevin Vance and Damian Miner for keeping our studio going. And you can find more information about the show. You can sign up for our podcast at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.